from WEKU at Eastern Kentucky University. This is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen, live in Frankfort at the state capitol today with a program that we're essentially calling our midterm review of the state legislature, the 2014 session of the General Assembly underway for just about the 30 days, the first half of its session. Of course, this is a 60-day session this year. And here's what we're going to do during today's program. We have a group of journalists, the folks who are covering the General Assembly on a regular basis, with us for the first half of the program. And then we will be joined later in the show by House Speaker Greg Stumbo and Senate President Robert Stivers. They'll be here with us. And, of course, we'll be inviting your input by email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send us a message on Facebook or send us a Twitter at WEKUEST. And when we open the phones, we certainly would be glad to get you on the air by telephone as well. And we hopefully will leave some time for you to interact with the journalists, but also in the second half hour of the program to interact with Speaker Stumbo and President Stivers. But let me introduce our guests who are with us right now on the Capitol campus. We are actually in the State House annex on the campus of the State Capitol. First up, we have John Cheeves, an investigative reporter with the Lexington Herald Leader, where he's been since 1997. John has been covering the current legislative session on a regular basis and previously worked in the paper's Washington Bureau. John, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Also with us, our public radio listeners are familiar with Jonathan Meter. Jonathan is the State House Bureau Chief for Kentucky Public Radio, a position that he assumed in 2013. Jonathan has been the recipient of several awards from the Louisville Society of Professional Journalists. Thank you, Jonathan, for being with us.
Thanks, John.
And Bill Goodman is with us. Our listeners may know the face as well as the voice of this gentleman because he represents KET, Kentucky Educational Television. He's the host of several programs on that station, including Kentucky Tonight, which is also a radio program now, and which listeners hear every Tuesday at 11 o'clock. Bill Goodman, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, John.
Gentlemen, let's just talk about what has been accomplished so far during this legislative session. Before the program, I get the idea, the general consensus, not a lot has been accomplished so far. Let me ask Bill Goodman to kind of kick us off.
Right, John. I think that's pretty much the course of events for any General Assembly session. Very little has been accomplished, but on the 27th day, I think we are in the session on the 27th day. We're sort of not quite at the midway point, so not a lot has been accomplished in both houses or even in committee. The most important work they have to do is the state budget. The governor presented his budget address a couple of weeks ago. Now they are looking at that in the House. The Senate will begin to look at it soon. So, of course, there are a lot of behind closed doors meetings going on and decisions being made early on. But so far, as far as law being made or laws being made, they really haven't gotten to that point yet.
Jonathan Meter is our Kentucky Public Radio State House Bureau Chief. What's going on right now on this campus of the state capitol?
Well, there's a bevy of committee meeting activity. There are several bills that are being discussed in both House and Senate committee meetings. There's, I think, in Senate Judiciary, there is an interesting bill by Senator Tom Buford that would exempt, and this is of interest to us as newspeople, newspaper carriers from a certain employee compensation laws that basically that it would prevent them from sort of getting, if they're injured on the job, sort of compensation for that. So that's sort of being discussed right now. There's a lot going on, but you know, again, as Bill said, at this early stage, I mean, yeah, we're almost at the halfway point, but you know, there really has not been a lot that has passed both chambers as of this moment.
And by the way, Jonathan, and for our listeners who may be concerned that we're not covering what's going on right now, WEKU's Stu Johnson is...
he's running around. He's in this building.
Is he in this building?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and where committee meetings are underway today?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Very good. So we'll hear more, of course, today, as we do every day, from Jonathan Meter, Stu Johnson, and all the latest of what's happening at the Capitol. John Cheeves, as a newspaper reporter, What's been most significant for you so far during this legislative session in terms of the story that you consider to be the headline of the session in these 27 days?
Well, so far it would be the state budget, and it's going to be a continued austerity for the state, as it is for much of the country since the recession began back in 2008. Governor Beshear proposed his budget at the start of the session in January. The House will come out in the first or second week of March with its own version of the state budget, and then it will pass it off to the Senate, and then there'll be some compromises, and by April 15th when they go home, hopefully we'll have some idea what the next two-year budget will look like. But with the exception of K through 12 school funding, which was partially restored by Governor Beshear after years of being cut, it's mostly continued cuts for everyone, from the state police to the state universities, to state agencies that do things like regulate drinking water and coal mining and road construction. So what really jumps out at me is that although we're several years out of the official end of the recession, in terms of public services, we're just kind of continuing to whittle away at what we'll be offering the public.
What do we know about that funding for K through 12 education? What is that going to look like? Do we know the amount of funds available and in what fashion those funds are going to be spent by the state to improve K through 12 education?
Well, John, the process is one that not a lot of people get to observe and know about. Jonathan Meader just mentioned that committee meetings are being held, and that's really the process that it takes. They will hear from all of the stakeholders. They will get testimony in the House first and then in the Senate, sort of duplicate messages about where, if we're just talking about education, where education it is. The governor proposed some, and guys, you can check me on these numbers, but I think somewhere in the neighborhood of $300 million to K through 12 funding for the next 2 years. That is significant in a way because it restores some of the funding that was cut last year. Some of those funds were federal funds. He's trying to restore those in the budget. It includes pay raises for our teachers and other employees of the school system. So there is quite a lot in there. Now, part of the process, though, is that that's just the governor's ideas. The House, through these committee meetings, ask tough questions of people like Dr. Terry Holliday of the Education Department, the commissioner, the secretary. They all come before and make their plea. In the final part of the budget that the House writes, they make their own decisions. They send it over to the Senate, and the process starts again. So it goes all the way through. And this $300 million, well, it could be added to, but more than likely it'll be whittled down to less than maybe what was first proposed. So it's a long process, and that's what's going on with committee meetings on smaller bills, bills that are of sometimes no significance. Some of them are in the way the legislature operates or the way state government operates. These big bills will be addressed throughout the rest of the session.
And we expect the education funding to sail through to be approved?
Oh, no. I'm not going to say that. I don't know if it...
Right. That would be probably a little foolhardy. I don't think that there's too many members of the legislature that don't support the concept of restoring K through 12 education. And again, we should point out that as much money, as Bill said, as several hundred million dollars extra in Governor Beshear's budget, that would just restore the basic school funding called the SEEK formula to 2008 levels. So we're still years behind. It would only partially restore additional money to the schools for things like textbook purchases and technology upgrades and teacher training. So it's a half-empty bag in some ways. I don't think anybody's against that. It's just a question of do we have the money for it, because it does mean such severe cuts to everyone else. Again, Kentucky State Police has already had a layoff, so they're going to get cut again. The court system was here yesterday, judges and court clerks complaining that they have employees that are living in poverty because of cuts to the Kentucky judicial system. So everyone is here lobbying very aggressively right now to get a little more of the pie.
What about higher education? Higher education is subject to some cuts. I know there were some capital items that were in the governor's proposal as well.
Yeah, I believe, and gentlemen, you can correct me, is it it's either 5% or is it 2.5%
cuts? I thought higher education got a 2.5%
yeah.
cut.
Yeah.
But the SOP for them was they got bonding. And so mm-hmm. each of the regional universities and U of L and UK and the community colleges should get some buildings out of it in terms of bonded debt. However, that is controversial because the Senate Republicans fear that we already have too much bonded debt in the state budget. Mm-hmm. We're looking at about 6% of the state's revenue that would be tied up essentially with debt. It's like having too big a credit card bill every month.
They did get some other items, $60 million for Bucks for Brains. There are a number of other projects for each campus. The governor and his budget writers did a pretty good job of spreading around the few dollars that they thought they could muster together. I mean, as John Chief said earlier, it is a terrifically austere budget. And as John also just mentioned, not everybody is pleased with what the governor has proposed. This will go through many rewrites and hearings, and what you see or what was presented in the budget address a few weeks ago will be a lot different, and I'm sure that Speaker Stumbo and President Stivers will talk about that in a few minutes.
And I'd just like to add one quick note on the issue of higher education. The president of the Kentucky Community Technical College System has said as much that while he hasn't given a numerical value to it, that there will be an increase in tuition. And as John pointed out, these bonded projects that are going to, you know, fund construction on the campuses across the state, that these are going to be paid largely in part by a capital fee that is going to be tacked onto credit hours that each student, I guess over the next 2 years, it'll be phased in to $8 per credit hour that will go toward funding these projects. So in addition to tuition raises, students coming into the school classes this fall can expect another hike on top of that.
This is Eastern Standard. We're going to take a short break, and we encourage you to get on the line at 800-621-8890, 800-621-8890, if you'd like to interact with our reporters. We're having a reporters roundtable discussing the 2014 legislative session, and with us we have reporters from the Lexington Herald Leader, Kentucky Public Radio, and the Kentucky Educational Television. The email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Your questions, your comments about the state's proposed budget, and what should the state's priorities be, and the process during this legislative session. That phone number again, 800-621-8890. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. We are live at the state capitol on this Thursday morning, and we have a journalist reporters roundtable underway. John Cheeves of the Lexington Herald Leader, Jonathan Meter of Kentucky Public Radio, and Bill Goodman of KET here to discuss the status of the current legislative session. Give us a little bit of a preview of what we can look forward to in coming days. Day 27, Bill Goodman tells me. So we have 33 days remaining in this 60-day legislative session. Your emails are welcome, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Give us a call, 800-621-8890, if you'd like to interact with our journalists. Let's talk a little bit about moving forward from here. What do we think? There's going to be a budget? Is that a given that we're going
oh, yeah.
to have a budget?
Well, that's by law. That's the only bill that they have to pass. Yes.
Unlike the federal government.
Well, there are a lot of different particulars, but you're right. They can't go beyond April 15th without a state budget, which goes into effect the 1st of July.
What else are we hearing about what else may actually occur in this session, bills that are generally have a groundswell of support that are likely to go forward?
Well, let me just mention real quickly and then turn it over to Jonathan and John, who are here a lot more than I am. I think a lot of people at the beginning of the session looked, or at least I did, as far as an analogy, that there might be a grand bargain in a couple of two or three different ways in this session. At least some of the advocates for expanded gambling, for example, or tax reform, or some of the other issues thought that maybe this was the year to come together on some of these things. today, it doesn't look like that any of those that I mentioned really have the momentum. So instead of a grand bargain, it might be little increments here and there. Some of the fixes to the state tax code could be done with individual bills. That's been attempted before instead of one big tax reform, a comprehensive measure. Gambling is earlier in the week was thought to be on life support, but the supporters are rallying back yesterday, and now we find ourselves midweek on Thursday. They're going to continue to look at that, so we can talk in detail about that. So there are a lot of other things, and it's really, again, a mid-session. You would think that last year the comparison is with the pension plan. We didn't think we were going to do anything on that at all. The General Assembly, very late in the session, because they had to, passed a pension bill, which came under some criticism, but at least it began to make some payments, and they're going to be tweaking that this year, too. So you never say it's over until April 15th.
How is tax reform actually being defined? What is the expectation? Reduced taxes for the average Kentuckian?
And that's something that Speaker Stumbo and President Stivers both have pointed out, which is that tax reform around here usually means a tax increase. And in this instance, tax reform is the plan that Governor Beshear put forward just last week to the legislature. And it would, if fully implemented, it would raise an additional $210 million a year for the state's general fund. And it is a long, sweeping plan based on a task force that Lieutenant Governor Jerry Abramson led back in 2012. It would lower income taxes for Kentuckians. It would lower the top corporate income tax rate. So it would lower some taxes, but it would extend the state a 6% sales tax to some services. It would raise the cigarette tax. It would lower some things, raise some things, but the net would be a $210 million a year gain for the general fund. It would also extend some new tax breaks for favored industries like the bourbon industry and the horse industry that have good lobbyists here in Frankfurt and friends in the legislature. As Bill pointed out, it's not clear that Governor Beshear's entire package will pass. Parts of it might pass, and that's where it gets tricky, because if you just give people their tax breaks, for example, if all we pass are tax breaks for the bourbon and horse industry, tens of millions of dollars, we've just made the budget even more difficult to balance. But it seems unlikely we're just going to pass the tax increases. So there's a reason you do one with the other. There's got to be a little carrot and a little stick at the same time.
Am I correct that there is a fairness bill that's being proposed or is likely to come about? And I'm thinking in terms of the federal court decision yesterday that ruled out Kentucky's prohibition or its unwillingness to accept same-sex marriages from other states. What's going to happen in that regard?
Well, to answer your first question, there are two fairness bills, and to sort of define what we're talking about, that they would enact a statewide fairness ordinance, sort of mimicking the fairness ordinances that exist in somewhat different forms, but by and large the same, in six different localities across Kentucky, and that they would prohibit employers from discriminating against employees on the basis of sexual orientation. In the House, Louisville Representative Mary Lou Marzian has filed a bill that would achieve that. In the Senate, Senator Morgan McGarvey gave an impassioned speech just a couple of days ago on the floor of the Senate. Both of those bills, like McGarvey has just introduced his, but both of them think that in the wake of U.S. District Court Judges John Hayburn's decision, that this is reflective of a growing sort of groundswell, that there will be more support than there was in 2004 when the gay marriage ban was voted on by Kentuckians.
John, I was just going to add that there are a couple of other bills that are getting a lot of attention this week. Smoking, statewide smoke ban is one. This week, a huge rally, one of the largest ever, yesterday in the state capitol. Also, Speaker Stumbo, and he'll probably weigh in on this in a few minutes, his minimum wage bill, which we talked about Monday night on Kentucky Tonight. A lot of people are in favor of that. There's some favoritism in the House. It probably is going to run into some difficulty in the Senate.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and you are welcome to interact, first of all, with our reporters who are here for a few more minutes, and then during the next half hour. We will have Speaker Stumbo and Senate President Stivers with us at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We did get a tweet, and it's a question for Speaker Stumbo, so we're going to hold on to that and address that to him. But the Twitter address, at WEKUEST. And, of course, you can post on our Facebook page. We'll keep an eye on that as well. So we talked about a budget that's going to get passed. We are talking about minimum wage. We're talking about tax reform. Anything else on the agenda for which we expect action?
For the Eastern Kentuckians in your audience, which is much of your audience, there are a couple of interesting announcements. Governor Beshear and the top legislators have announced, largely through the state budget, two big projects to help the ailing economy of Eastern Kentucky. And one is about three-quarters of $1 billion over the next 6 years to extend and four-lane the Mountain Parkway so that you would essentially be able to drive from Lexington and the interstates all the way to Pikeville on contiguous four-lane roads, which would be a big step up for the road system out in Eastern Kentucky. The other thing is a rural broadband improvement. With the help of Congressman Hal Rogers and some federal money, Governor Beshear has announced that he's going to try to bring high-speed Internet access throughout the rural areas of the state with a special emphasis on Eastern Kentucky, because without high-speed broadband access, a lot of industries just won't even consider your community as a place to relocate. So Governor Beshear and the legislators are really trying to respond to the decline of the coal industry in Eastern Kentucky with whatever aid they can muster.
We're talking two different highways, the electronic highway as well as a physical highway, both to assist in economic development.
Exactly. And there were some people who criticized the first announcement about the Mountain Parkway, saying that that's asphalt, that's old 20th century thinking, and that the only thing roads are good for is for people to leave the area. Those same critics were very excited by the broadband announcement, and they said that's good 21st century thinking. That will actually help local entrepreneurs set up their own businesses in Eastern Kentucky, because they'll be able to communicate and do business with the outside world.
SOAR. People have heard this acronym SOAR, and that's tied into this economic development initiative. Bill Goodman, give us a little background on SOAR.
Save Our Appalachian Region was a consortium led by Governor Beshear and Congressman Rogers, who, by the way, John, I think called the broadband initiative Silicon Holler,
yeah.
Which got everybody's attention at the SOAR meeting in December in Pikeville, brought together a lot of stakeholders, a number of people in Eastern Kentucky to try to improve and look for an alternative for jobs and job creation and economic development other than the reliability on coal, which has been holding up that part of the state for many, many years.
Gentlemen, our guests, Speaker Stumbo and President Stivers, are in the room ready to join us in the next segment of our Eastern Standard program. 30 seconds from each of you. Anything else you want to tell us about what we can expect?
Jonathan, sure. We've been talking about how there's been very little activity in terms of one chamber taking up another chamber's respective bill. I believe next week there's going to be a meeting of the Senate State and Local Government Committee that is going to discuss House Representative Jesse Crenshaw's felon voter restoration bill. And it's been long anticipated that U.S. Senator Rand Paul, whom has voiced support for this issue, will be testifying in support of that bill. So that's going to be sort of a high-profile name that's going to come to little old Frankfort to give
his 2 cents. There's a Senate bill on heroin trafficking that will essentially crack down on the serious heroin traffickers while trying to steer some of the addicts into treatment rather than prison cells, and that is moving toward the House right now.
With the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate in the room, I'm not about to sum up anything. I'm going to wait to patiently and let them tell me what they're going to do.
Bill Goodman of KET, Jonathan Meter, Kentucky Public Radio, John Cheeves of the Lexington Herald Leader. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us.
Thank you.
And stay with us. We are going to get a chance to interact with Speaker Stumbo and Senate President Stivers in just a few moments. But first, next Wednesday marks the midway point for the 2014 Kentucky General Assembly. Typically, much of the heavy lifting regarding legislation occurs during the second half of the 60-day session. WEKU's Stu Johnson reports this winter's lawmaking exercise seems to be following in that tradition.
The House will come to order. Will the members please proceed towards your seats?
Every day for 60 days, the House and Senate come to order at the call of their respective leaders. In the House, it's Speaker Greg Stumbo. For the Senate, it's President Robert Stivers. As the two bodies work separately toward the common goal of serving the people of Kentucky, they review dozens of proposed bills, some headline-grabbing and others not so well-known. One of the not-so-high-profile agenda items in the first half of this session has been the nurse practitioner bill. The measure, which gives eligible Kentucky nurse practitioners authority to write prescriptions for non-controlled drugs, sailed through both chambers and awaits the governor's signature. Kathy Wheeler is a nurse practitioner who's celebrating passage.
We struggle with barriers, and barriers keep us from providing care to patients. So the benefit will be to patients. It's the access to care issue, and we've got a big need, and it's getting bigger.
Implementation of federal health care reforms puts more Kentuckians in a position to receive health care services. In previous sessions, the nurse practitioner bill faced much opposition from the Kentucky Medical Association. The compromise approved this session requires a 4-year collaboration between nurse practitioners and physicians before the nurse achieves prescriptive authority. Longtime health advocate Sheila Schuster says many of the 3,000 nurse practitioners have already met that standard. With some doctors refusing to accept Medicaid, Schuster says the timing of this measure is crucial.
The nurse practitioners have been willing and are continuing to be willing to open their practices to Medicaid patients. So we really see this as coming at a time that was absolutely critical for Kentucky.
Governor Beshear is expected to sign the bill into law. Early in the session, the governor made his views known on education funding. He promised lawmakers he would propose more money for elementary through high school education, even at the cost of other state agencies. Kentucky Education Association Director Mary Ann Blankenship says it's a positive step forward.
We're very hopeful, and we are particularly appreciative of the governor's proposal to fund education slightly higher, but not sufficiently to catch us up to where we were 5 years ago. And we are hopeful that most members of the General Assembly will support the governor's proposals.
Blankenship realizes the final verdict on education funding awaits action near the end of the session. One of Kentucky's signature industries, the equine business, is also keeping an eye on legislative activities. Expanded gambling is traditionally right up near the top of horse industry issues. Kentucky Thoroughbred Association Director David Schweitzer isn't optimistic about its passage this session. Another long-standing item for the equine profession is the elimination of the sales tax on feed, fencing equipment, and veterinary pharmaceuticals for horses. Such an exemption already exists for other livestock. Schweitzer says it's important to remember such a tax break would not be for just thoroughbred breeders.
The folks down in western Kentucky are not in the thoroughbred business. They're in the quarter horse business. The people up in Floyd County are in the trail riding business, and they have horses, and they pay that 6% sales tax too. So it's just not the thoroughbred industry in central Kentucky which gets all the publicity.
The equine feed and equipment tax exemption has also been before lawmakers for years. A part of it is included this year in the governor's tax reform proposal. Legislative leaders, meanwhile, in both chambers are giving good marks for progress in the current session. Senate Majority Floor Leader Damon Thayer says success in a General Assembly session is not based on the final bill passage tally.
I'm not one of these people who is going to judge a legislative session by the number of bills passed. I judge it by the quality of the bills passed, the number of bad bills that don't see the light of day, and hopefully the successful passage of the budget and the road plan.
The successful passage of a 2-year budget has not always been a given in Frankfort. Over the past decade, lawmakers have had to come back in special session more than once to approve a state spending plan. But House Majority Floor Leader Rotke Atkins doesn't think this will be one of those years.
I'm confident that we'll get a budget when we leave at the end of session. I'm very confident in that. There's no reason that we can't reach middle ground. There's no reason we can't reach compromise. That's what people expect us to do across Kentucky, to do that.
Action on a state budget will have to wait for several more weeks. The session calendar would likely put a conference committee meeting on the budget near the end of March. As we near the midpoint of this year's General Assembly, there's still plenty of time for more items to come before both the House and Senate before the final gavel in mid-April.
This Senate shall stand adjourned until the hour of 2 p.m. Thursday, February 13th, year of our Lord, 2014.
For WEKU, I'm Stu Johnson.
This is Eastern Standard on WEKU. I'm John Hingsbergen. We are live at the state capitol in the Capitol Annex. And joining us now are Speaker Greg Stumbo and President Robert Stivers. Speaker Stumbo is Speaker of the Kentucky House of Representatives, a Democrat, previously serving 12 years as a member of the House before his election as Kentucky Attorney General in 2003, a term that ended in 2007. And Mr. Stumbo assumed the role of Speaker of the House the following year. He represents House District 95, which is in Floyd County. Speaker Stumbo, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, John, one little clarification. I served 23 years in the House before I became Attorney General.
Thank you very much. And Senate President Robert Stivers. Mr. Stivers has been a member of the Kentucky State Senate since 1997.
Yes, sir.
Are we good? Okay. Was elected Majority Leader in 2008, became Senate President in 2013. Mr. Stivers represents Senate District 25, encompassing the counties of Clay, Knox, Lee, Owsley, Whitley, and Wolf. Thank you for being with us, President Stivers.
Yeah, and can I clarify one thing?
Oh, of course.
When the Speaker was elected, I was still in grade school.
He always says that. I think they stuck him there about five years.
Well, gentlemen, we're grateful for you being here with us, and we hope our listeners are interested in interacting with you. We do have phone lines open at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com or tweet WEKUEST. We just had a group of journalists discussing the legislative session so far. Gentlemen, we are at the midpoint. Let's get your assessment. Let's start with Speaker Stumbo. How do you feel about how things have gone so far?
Well, things obviously in this type of atmosphere where there's not a lot of money, I thought Governor Beshear did a pretty good job with his budget, to tell you the truth. So there's not going to be a lot of expanded type of programs through legislative action. So you know, you're not going to see that sort of thing. I think the session's going about like one would have expected it to go. It's like a train going uphill. The first part of it slow, but then when it hits the top, and it usually hits the top about the midpoint, it really starts going downhill fast, and you'll see more and more action. We're seeing more and more committees meeting. We're seeing more bills starting to come out of committee. So, you know, on balance, I think we're about where we generally are at the midpoint.
And Senator Stivers, President, Senate President Robert Stivers.
I think the Speaker has a fair assessment of where we are. It's normal. In the 17 years that I've been here, the speed of which we've gone through some things. Also think that from the perspective of how we've operated, there's been a couple of bills that we've known that needed to move through that have gotten through the both chambers quickly to take care of some problems that were out there, but everything else is moving accordingly.
The big issue, of course, is always the budget, which we assume will not be occurring. We won't have in place until April 15th, the end of the session. What about tax reform? The governor made some proposals of tax reform last month, and we understand there's been some activity this week.
Chairman Rand in the Appropriations and Revenue Committee in the House held a hearing, an informational hearing. I got to see part of it, and he did not take a vote or didn't ask for any type of show of support or show of opposition at that time. It's a work in progress. It's pretty, you know, I've used the term daunting. It's a daunting challenge to pass a bill of that magnitude anytime. But, you know, I would say there's still time to pass major legislation if the wills of the body so reflect. But I think it's going to be a daunting task.
I don't disagree with the Speaker on that. There's been some discussions that the governor's office has had. In fact, as of yesterday, I spoke with the governor about a couple of issues. We're going to continue that dialogue. Never rule out the possibilities, as I've said on many occasions. People thought we didn't have a very good chance of dealing with one of the larger problems we've had come before the General Assembly in my time, and we did it all in a 26-day session last year in dealing with the pension reforms. And did it quite successfully.
Our program is an interactive program, and we invite listeners to participate by calling 800-621-8890. And we do have on the line a caller from Lexington, Anthony from Lexington, with a question for Speaker Stumbo and President Stivers. Anthony, thanks for calling. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I'm Reverend Anthony Everett with NIA Community of Faith in Lexington, and just wanted to talk about the House Bill 70, the restoration of voting rights for former felons. And I understand I see some traction happening with that particular bill. One of the things that I see that's a major concern of mine is this the issue of adding additional time after the person has finished a sentence, adding additional time for them to have to go through a process before they can have their restoration of voting rights. And it just seems extremely unethical and unfair to those individuals that have done their time to have to go through a waiting period of any sort. So just wanted to hear the comments on that.
Speaker,
that bill, Anthony, has cleared the House. Representative Crenshaw has championed that legislation. This is the eighth time. Now, let me say that again. This is the eighth time the House has approved that particular piece of legislation. I'm not sure that they're all exactly, eight bills were exactly correct. But eight times the House has voted in support of restoring felony voting rights. We're hopeful that this time the Senate will allow the voters of Kentucky to decide whether or not that should be done. It does require a constitutional amendment.
President Stivers, will that be happening?
Well, first of all, let me make sure people understand that there is a process in place that this governor has been appropriately handling, that there's an application made to the governor's office, and within probably 45 to 90 days, an individual can get his civil rights restored. And I think a lot of people miss that is out there. That would not change under some of the discussion that I'm hearing. But when you think about an individual who has completed their time by either serving out or, as some people say, getting off the paper, which is being completed with either their probationary period or parole period, having them go through a period of time before there is an automatic restoration, I don't think is unreasonable. When you hear and read the statistics that if there is going to be something that occurs, and, you know, recidivism is high in the first 2 to 3 years. Once that period passes, then the individual would be allowed to have their rights restored. Plus, there is another question.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, go.
I understood somebody was breaking in.
Yeah, no, nah, this is Anthony Everett again. One of the things I just wanted to say is that the process changes each time you have a different governor in place, and so that's been one of the major problems, that the process has never been a solid process, and you have people that, as a result of that, have been unable to get restored rights, restored voting rights, and yet they haven't returned to jail at all. And
all right,
then
Anthony, thank you.
The recidivism rate really doesn't have a bearance on if someone has actually done their time, completed their sentence, and if they have completed their sentence, they really should have the right to vote again. They should be a returned citizen.
Anthony, thanks for bringing up that issue. We really are grateful for you bringing it up. And let's finish getting a response from Mr. Stivers, and we need to move on to another caller.
The other thing that we have had some discussion on in the Senate is whether or not you should have an automatic restoration without, again, having some period there and making sure that not only recidivism from the commission of a felony, but that the individual is not doing anything in the way of violating other laws, such as being a misdemeanant, a repeat and habitual misdemeanant after having had a felony conviction. So we have some concerns about it. We understand the process, but we don't think some of the things we were discussing in the Senate are unreasonable, considering that most people believe that the framers of our Constitution some 230 years ago drafted a pretty good document.
Speaking of the Constitution, let's talk about a couple of Second Amendment issues that have come up. One is the issue that would allow those who are essentially victims of domestic violence to get permits to carry weapons, concealed carry permits. And the other relates to the ability for folks who have such permits to take them into drinking establishments, into bars. Where do these two pieces of legislation stand, and are they related, Mr. Stumbo?
I don't know that they're related. I don't believe that those are bills that the National Rifle Association is promoting. I think they've taken a position that they're obviously support. They support the bills, but it's not their bills. It's not part of their legislative package. I've got some concerns. I'm, you know, probably the biggest pro-gun guy that you can think of in the General Assembly. I've carried more of their bills, I think, than probably anybody other than Bob Dameron. And I gave their issues to Bob Dameron when he got up here in the General Assembly. So I have some concerns. When we passed the original concealed carry bill, for example, the exemptions as to where you could carry a gun were very well thought out, I believe. And bars were excluded for obvious reasons. You know, giving someone who's got a protective order in a domestic violence situation an automatic right to carry a weapon without proper training seems to me to be something we want to really take a long, hard look at. And let me use a story that I'm familiar with. Amanda Ross, who was gunned down by Steve Nunn, actually had a concealed carry permit, had gone to the classes, was trained, and had a firearm near her possession. She didn't have it with her, I don't believe, on the day that she was killed. I can't remember if it was in her purse or not. I don't believe it was. But in any event, you know, giving people who aren't trained in the use of firearms weapons doesn't really strike me as being what we want to do. We do have protections in place with Amanda's Law, the law that we passed after the tragedy that I just described with Amanda Ross, and it provides for GPS monitoring. If the judge feels like that there is a real issue about the endangerment of the person, we can put he or she can order a GPS device put on that person, and it would guarantee that person's whereabouts would be given to the person being protected if that 500 foot or whatever the ring is. So you would have notice that the person would be in your vicinity of your person.
President Stivers.
Well, I do believe these are two bills the NRA are supporting, and for individuals who are in a situation, first of all, with a facility that serves alcohol, they would not be individuals that would be allowed to go in there if they are drinking the alcohol. It is the individual who is not drinking and has the concealed carry and feels from a protection matter they need to have that with them, and we think it's an appropriate bill to move forward. As to the EPO-DVO portion of this discussion, I, like the speaker, don't believe they are in any way related. One thing I do want to somewhat caution people on thinking is something the speaker spoke of in the way that the GPS works everywhere. It doesn't. There are dark areas that individuals do not know, and a GPS doesn't work. I know in my hometown, You can ask for a GPS reading and you don't get it. They don't even recognize certain parts of my county. But as to individuals who feel they need the protection, I understand there are some concerns with this, but a piece of paper doesn't necessarily, and this is also the tragedy of the Amanda Ross situation, the paper doesn't necessarily protect you. Individuals who want to disregard the law will. And for individuals who feel they need that type of protection, they can carry a weapon on them just as long as it is not concealed. But if they want to conceal it, they can, then would have the ability to do so where they are under and have received an emergency protective order or a domestic violence order.
Senate President Robert Stivers. We also have with us House Speaker Greg Stumbo. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Time for you. There's plenty of time for you to get on board with a question for the leaders of Kentucky's legislative bodies in the midst of this legislative session. 800-621-8890, 800-621-8890. Let's go ahead and talk to Cynthia from Lexington. Cynthia, you are on the air with Speaker Stumbo and President Stivers. Are you there,
yes,
Cynthia?
My name is, yes, I'm interested in the legislation and the action going ahead with regard to the Kentucky teacher retirement system. My understanding, you know, teachers contribute to that retirement system each and every paycheck, but it's been since 2008 since there's been any legislation, action going back to paying into our retirement system. And I am curious as to the positions of our legislators online.
President Stivers?
Well, as we understand it, or as I understand it, much of the problem with the teacher retirement system is that which we've had with everything. It's been the economy. The market's dropped. But in the last 6 to 8 months, I think the assets of the KTRS have moved from $14.5 billion to $17 billion because of the natural move of the market. Now, that's a snapshot, and it doesn't obviate us from the need to continue to stabilize our systems. But we have funded, and I've said this in defense of the legislature, both Democrat, Republican, House, and Senate, we have funded at the levels that the executive branch has asked us to, and we will continue to do that in this session. And we will take every step that we committed to, at least it is my opinion, to fill those unfunded liabilities that we committed to do in the regular session last year in the short session.
Speaker Stumbo.
That's correct. Two things that you need to understand here. One, when we did the pension reform legislation back last year, the Kentucky Teachers Retirement System came forward and did not want to be a part of that process because they, in their own record, is saying this, that they were comfortable in their funding position, that their equity situation, even though the market was down, didn't require the overhaul that was given to the state employee retirement system. I don't believe that's changed in a year. I think that there is an effort on behalf of some of the people who are in charge over there to cover up some of their problems concerning investment strategies and so on and so forth. The system is not anywhere close to being endangered. With the current returns, I think it's 23 years the payments can be made without any interruption. And in the worst-case scenario, now remember, that's in the worst-case scenario. And what we proposed in the House and what I think should be done, if I were in the system, I would want this. We created an oversight committee with the pension reform bill in the 13th session, and it doesn't have any authority to change the decisions of the commission. The commission is still elected by the members and so on and so forth. But what it does is it oversees what they do. And you can't have enough eyes on these, you know, these decisions that are made, because the decisions that are made, if they're wrong, affect a great number of people. And in states that have commissions like that, that oversee the pension funds, the returns are noticeably better, about 15% better across the board. So we Chairman Yontz is having a hearing on that bill. I think that's something we can do to help make sure that the system stays fully funded, or funded to the extent that it is not in jeopardy. But I can assure every retired teacher in Kentucky, their system is not in jeopardy at this time. But I agree with the President. We'll monitor it. We'll do whatever it takes to make sure that those benefits that were promised will be paid.
We're just about out of time. We have just a couple of minutes remaining. But what about the minimum wage? What's going to happen with the effort to raise the minimum wage in Kentucky?
I guess you're looking at me, so I'm going to
answer
that. The bill is in our chamber, and I've said this, that, you know, it is my belief that we need to be focusing on creating an economy that talks that more than just the minimum wage. We've lost 7,000 jobs in eastern Kentucky that pay well above and beyond the minimum wage, and we want to talk about, in a much broader context, the economy and how we create or recreate or get those jobs back. And we want to have an economy that creates the $15 and $20 an hour job, and what can we do? And that's why we're willing to engage in a lot of different talks about the tax reform and how it would bring competitive jobs in here. I don't want to in any way make this personal or anything else, but we feel it's a very narrow approach about how we deal with an economy that has been sluggish and slow, and that we want to talk about some things that are going to create jobs that are well beyond that minimum wage standard.
And Speaker Stumbaugh on minimum wage.
Well, we obviously join our colleagues in wanting to do the exact same thing, and we're focused on creating and recreating our economy so it can be competitive. But this doesn't have anything to do with that part of it. It's really apples and oranges. This is just simply a bill. They did it in 07. The legislature, in a bipartisan manner, increased over a three-year period a little bit less than a dollar a year the minimum wage. It's time to do it again. Kentuckians believe that. The House voted in support of that. We raised the threshold for small businesses up from $95,000 to $500,000 to protect them in this recovery period that we're in from the Great Recession. So I think it's just time to do it. When you put a pencil to the equation, here's what it says. If you work for the minimum wage and you work 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, you make $15,080 before taxes. That's not a living wage, and people can't live on that. 70% of the people that earn the minimum wage are women. And if you want to help people at the bottom of the scale, that's a whole different scenario than creating jobs. This doesn't do anything to create jobs. It simply gives these people a chance to live at a little bit easier lifestyle than what they have. Not an extravagant lifestyle, but just to pay the basic bills that they have to be confronted with every day.
Well, on that issue of minimum wage, we're going to wrap up our conversation. It's been fast-paced, a lot undone here today, but I know you all have some work yet to do for the next 30-some days, 33 days. President Robert Stivers, thank you so much for being with us. Speaker Greg Stumbaugh,
thank you
for being with us on this week's Eastern Standard, a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our associate producer are Andrew Moorhead and Logan Riley. Richard Turner produced today's program for us. Our technical director is Jonice Franklin. Julie Tennell has handled the telephones at the station. A reminder, the show will be available online later today and available as a podcast. It will be repeating Sunday evening at 6. For Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in.